It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here singing the praises of Credge, talking about the end of support for Windows 7 and the beginning of new life for Windows 10 19H1. Yes, it's Golden Master time. Next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 614, recorded Wednesday, March 27th, 2019. Embrace your inner Credge. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Smart Deploy. Smart Deploy allows IT departments to re-image unlimited computer models from one golden image. Search their library for your models and get 15 free licenses with 1 year of support. That's $720 worth of free IT software at smartdeploy.com/windows. And by Sophos Cybersecurity. In an age of evolving cyber threats, you need evolved cybersecurity. Powered by artificial intelligence, Sophos can detect threats before they strike, killing ransomware, viruses, and other cyber threats dead in their tracks. Get a free security scan and or a free trial today at Sophos.com. And by Atlassian. Atlassian software powers the full spectrum of collaboration between IT teams and the rest of your organization. Visit Atlassian.com/IT to see what IT can be by giving their products a try for free. It's time for Windows Weekly.
I'm trying. You're asking a question?
I'm trying a different thing. The guy who did Let's Get Ready to Rumble made a ton of money on that.
Yeah.
If I could just come up with a really good tag.
Yep.
Windows Weekly. No, that's terrible. Paul Thurrott, THURRO, doublegood.com. See, I should trademark that. Mary Jo Foley, allaboutmicrosoft.com. And together we form a ham sandwich. I'm the ham. There's the bread. And today we will talk about Credge.
Yes, we will.
Have we? I wish we could call it Credge.
we can call it whatever we want.
We have to call it something. That's actually the biggest problem with it, right?
But they haven't really given it a...
They're just going to call it Edge, but it makes it difficult to have a conversation because it becomes a... You have to start adding words. You know, the Chromium-based version of, or the original... You know, what do they call it? MS Edge HTML or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how you. It makes it difficult.
It does.
What's Microsoft's engine called?
Trident.
No. Trident.
Trident.
So it's, they call it something different, don't they? Actually, now
they call it MS HTML. Yeah.
Oh, MS HTML. Mushtimal.
Yeah.
Okay,
but so it was we're going from Trident.
We're going from Mushtimal to Chromium.
Mushtimal.
Not Mushtimal.
Right, but here's the big news about Credge, because I actually find this rather
incredible. Really like Credge. I love Credge. Okay, go ahead.
Microsoft has not released a beta version of this or pre-released insider version of it. It has leaked to the internet, and Mary Jo Foley installed it.
What? You never do stuff like that.
So somebody asked me today, they're like, wow, you just took like a random exe and you just installed it on your Windows 7 machine?
Off the internet.
What could possibly go wrong?
No, that isn't what I did. I actually found a trusted source who downloaded the random exe and then I got it from that person.
Wow.
That's walking cat.
That's a rather communicable way of getting software, I guess.
I was talking to somebody. I'm like, I want to put it on Windows 7, but I'm afraid. The person's like, I put it on like 10 PCs. Here, just put it on your machine.
Does it replace Edge or is it just another browser?
It's next to Edge. So there's two Edges side by side.
Next to Edge.
Yeah, let me get this humor out of the way first. I've not actually tried this, but apparently... If you are using the old version of Microsoft Edge, you can install the new version and you just set it as the default browser. Edge says, are you sure you want to replace Edge with Edge? Please give Edge another chance before you go to
Edge. I don't know. Do I? But guess what? It works.
Clean that up.
It works. It works.
And
yeah, on Windows 7,
I would say
it's the first time you get Internet Explorer. I mean, you get Edge on Windows 7 because it's there was no Edge for Windows 7.
That's right.
Right.
So that's nice. But you probably wouldn't notice this. In Windows 10, when you right click on things and that right click menu appears, it has those Edge style icons. It makes it look more like a native app, a native Windows 10 app, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Does it do that in Windows 7 as well?
What kind of icons?
Yeah. I know. As I asked you this question, I realized this was
I'm not going to know the answer. I see a shiny E with a little flipped piece of feather on it. I don't know what that means. Yeah. Is that what you're asking me?
No, it's okay.
No.
So I'll look. I'm the worst for seeing
any UI, anything.
Did you notice any fluent design?
don't even go there. Don't even try.
The second most impressive thing about this release, honestly, is that even in this current rough pre-release state, it's pretty much there. I mean, it's missing some key things that I think like real Edge users would want, right? Because it's a lot more like Chrome than it is like Edge right now. Look, feel, and feature set. But it's like completely usable. And after half a day of just kind of toying around with it, I thought I could actually use this. You know, so I did set it as my default browser. And then eventually, because of the muscle memory problem, I kept clicking on the Chrome icon to go do stuff. And I realized I need to get rid of this thing and just use Edge. And it's fine. I mean, it's only been a few days, granted, you know, 3 days maybe. But it honestly works really well.
Would you recommend this for normal people? I mean, there's no benefit to it except, I mean, if you're using Chrome, for instance, you're probably.
No, the audience here is obviously enthusiasts. There are people who are just really curious about this kind of stuff and want to see what it looks like. And it's not officially available. You have to kind of go find it. You know, I've had a bunch of people ask me for a download link, and like Mary Jo, I got it from a friend of a friend, and I'm sure there are places now we can find links to it. But I
saw the link; it's out there.
Okay. Oh yeah,
I kind of joked with you about how you got it. I got it the same.
Do you want to set a timer to see how long it takes me to find it?
Well, today it's probably a lot easier.
I think if I go to Reddit and I search for it, I'll probably find a link. But
you know how I found it? I just Googled. Where is the Chromium Edge download?
Oh, Google.
So it is, it's good. You know, Chrome. It's got Chromecast instead of Miracast. It's
That's nice.
It is configured with Bing instead of Google, but you can change it. And it's not a game like it was in the original Edge. You can actually just change it.
Yeah, I just found links for everybody.
It does sync everything through your Microsoft account, as expected. And you can...
And it saves your passwords, right?
As expected, yeah. And you can bring in your stuff from other browsers, and it, you know, that works fine.
And can you use your Chrome extensions?
Yes, you can.
Nice.
It has its own extension store, but there's a switch at the bottom of that page inside, or the extensions page. You can use third-party source.
You think that's how Microsoft will deliver it?
Yeah, it doesn't do the Chrome // store thing, but whatever the address is of the Chrome website, you can Google that and bring it up. You can install any.
Well, it's not unusual, for instance, when you go to the web page for a Chrome extension or a GitHub or whatever, that they'll have a link to the extension directly in the Chrome store. So that would work. That point you right to it.
It's not quite the same. It's not exactly the same. But one thing you can do if you go to, say, mobile.twitter.com, for example, in Chrome, that actually has a link in the menu that says install.
Right.
It recognizes
that's the PWA thing.
It's PWA, that's right. Yeah. Now, in Edge right now, in the Chromium-based version of Edge, it actually does not have an install link. But you can save it as a shortcut like you could in Chrome. Instead of going to Chrome :// apps, you can go to Edge :// apps. And that thing will appear there. You can right-click it and say, I want to run this thing as a window rather than as a browser tab, right? And so then it appears like a native app in your system. And so it does all that stuff. You know, that's the thing that Edge never did right. They allowed you to save shortcuts to your taskbar, but when you clicked on them, they would just open in whatever the existing Edge window was. It's instantly usable. You know, for someone like me who struggled every time I left Chrome, and including those times I left Chrome to use Chrome-based browsers like Brave, which I like. You know, it's not that I don't like it, or Opera, you know, Opera, which is not it is, right? They use Chromium, I think.
This one just feels very natural.
Like,
okay.
It feels, it just looks and feels and works exactly like I want it to anyway. So it's great. I mean, it
works. And guess what works? TweetDeck works.
Yeah. So what's the I don't mean the relevance of TweetDeck, but both you and Brad mentioned this. Did this not work in Chrome or something?
So in lower powered machines like Surface Go, you tried to load TweetDeck.com in Edge, the Edge that exists now, and it just worked terribly. Like, it's huge lag. The columns weren't refreshing. It was just not really usable to me.
Yeah. Hmm. But now it works fine.
Now it works. Yeah.
Yeah. If you have, no matter how much RAM you have, this browser will use that much RAM plus 2 more gigabytes of RAM. so it sort of works like Chrome does, I guess. That might be a sticking point. I don't know if that's this is a pre-release, if you will. Let me see if right now, actually, I've been using it here for a little while. I noticed this, especially on my laptop. It seemed like it was using a lot of RAM. Mm. Yeah. I don't know. It's not that bad.
But that just might be because it's early days, right? Like, they're telling us they're going to use less CPU mm-hmm. than Google, right?
Yeah,
Chrome. We'll see. Yeah, I'm like,
turn off all those Google services. You can save a lot of resources.
No, and you say when Leo says, would any normal person want this? Once it hits mainstream, if it is as good as we're hoping it will be, there will be people who will want to use it because of, Microsoft privacy versus Google privacy mm-hmm. and what kind of data is collected.
I consider using it. You bet.
It's if you accept the notion of the power of the defaults, and this is a good default. And for someone like me, I granted this is a low use case kind of thing, but anything I don't have to install every time I bring up a Windows computer is a wonderful gift, you know. Mm. And having this thing eventually be what is in the OS will be great. This is great. This is exactly what I want. It's really nice.
Yep.
Hello, Craig.
I know. I have high hopes. I was worried because we weren't seeing the beta. I was like, man, is it really terrible? Like, that's why they're not
playing exactly.
Beta?
Exactly. And it's surprisingly good. Exactly right.
Yeah, it is.
We have to embrace our inner Craig.
So we don't know. We don't know yet when Microsoft's going to make the official public preview of this available. We all had thought they were going to do it really early this year, and it still isn't out. So
will that happen? And then you can install it even if you're not on the insider builds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so, I believe so. Right.
Well, I mean, originally it's So they have their own insider program. Yes.
So it is Edge Insider. You'll be an Edge Insider.
That's right. Yeah,
because you'll be able to put it on Windows 7, even though you're not in the Windows 10 Insider program.
That will be popular, I think.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think so, too.
Well, this is happy day. Oh, happy day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been, like she said, it's been a little nerve-wracking. I think a lot of us expected it sooner. It still technically hasn't happened. And then as the time goes by, you kind of worry, like, is something wrong, And I don't know. I had heard from somebody whose name I can't mention, I guess, but someone had talked to the Edge team about this recently and was telling me that, the interactions that they have with the Chrome guys at Google have always been good, really. I mean, obviously at a higher level, there are almost no relations, but, there's been no blockage or weirdness about features getting into Chromium or anything like that. Like, apparently that stuff's going great, so... I don't know. It's all pointing to a pretty good outcome here so far.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And then there's some enterprise features, too, coming. This isn't just for consumers.
Brad was finding some of these things. I kept hearing people say there's also going to be an enterprise version or enterprise features or some kind of – I don't know if it'll be a separate version just for enterprise users. But he found out there's going to be the ability to sign into Edge with an Active Directory account. So that you can, sync up with Edge that way if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. What else did he find? He found
that makes sense, by the way. I'm sorry, real quick. I think the rationale behind that is you can do that today in Windows 10 when you sign into Windows 10.
Right.
Of course, Windows 7 and Windows 8.1 don't have that capability. Mm-hmm. But this would be one way to access your corporate resources through the browser, because a lot of things are kind of, we don't really use the term intranet these days, but that kind of stuff where you access websites, essentially. and your yep. credentials pass through. So that actually makes a lot of sense.
That does make a lot of sense. Then he also has here a feature called Enable App Container Lockdown. Enables the use of app containers on a sandbox process to improve security. But he notes that we don't know if all these things will be available right on day one when Credge comes out or not, or if it'll be something later. We don't know.
I should add as kind of a tip, if you're familiar with Chrome, you know that there's a flags page, right? Chrome:// flags.
Yeah.
So there's a similar page, which is Edge:// flags. And you should spend some time looking through it. The list is humongous, but you can search for a couple of things. Like you can enable some Fluent effects, which, like Mary Jo, I never saw any difference at all, but apparently that kind of stuff is in there. But there's some UI tweaks you can make, and there's a bunch of stuff there. I think that's going to be a rich area of exploration for people who want to customize the browser, and we'll probably see some good specific tips around different flags to enable. In fact, I don't know, I did this on my laptop. I was going to say I could go look at this and see which ones I did, but I think I was away this week.
Warning.
So they're mostly
experimental features ahead.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's just, you know, just like on Chrome. So,
yeah.
I don't have them on here. I wish that would.
But it's going to be interesting. I wouldn't think they'd have a separate version of Edge just for enterprises. I would think it's one Edge, right?
Well, good news. Credge is on its way. Here comes Credge. Hey, I want to commend Chris Capicella because I know he's listening as he's jogging right now. Mm-hmm. He has sent a memo out to employees saying, do not do any April Fool's pranks.
So I think this might have been inspired by Mary Jo Foley. Because last week she declared that she doesn't like fun things.
Yeah.
I said I hate fun.
I believe that was the title of the show. And he got the message loud and clear.
But I agree with him because some of these pranks are so real.
We all hate them.
People flip out.
It's just like the institutional stupidity of some people at Google wasting time to come up with goofy, obviously fake nonsense. And then it just goes out on official Google.
And sometimes it really annoys people, like putting those little Despicable Me things in our email.
Yeah.
That's despicable. Chris's memo, which The Verge had, it's internal, but it's so good, Chris. I hope you don't mind. It's that time of year when tech companies try to show their creativity with April Fool's Day stunts. Sometimes the outcomes are amusing, and sometimes they're not. Either way, data tells us these stunts have limited positive impact and can actually result in unwanted news cycles. Considering the headwinds the tech industry is facing today, I'm asking all teams at Microsoft to not do any public-facing April Fool's Day stunts. If you want to put Saran Wrap on my toilet, fine. But don't do it in public. I added that. Sorry, Chris. I appreciate that people may have devoted time and resources to these activities. Oh, believe me, I appreciate it. But I believe we have more to lose than gain by attempting to be funny on this one day. That is awesome. I wish Sundar Pichai would send out a note like that. And, by the way, I didn't even know this, but in related news, the Microsoft Teams Clippy icons, or whatever, they were going to do, what were they going to do? They were going to do, like, stickers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Killed off.
The team stickers, yeah.
Yeah, in one day. Gone.
By the brand police.
The brand police. Yay. We were talking about it yesterday, and Steve Gibson was all excited that Clippy was back.
Really?
Yes.
First of all, Steve Gibson never gets excited. So that's...
He is so strange because the things he embraces.
Right.
Clippy has been trying to get his job back since 2001, and his brief appearance on GitHub was another attempt. While we appreciate the effort, we have no plans to bring Clippy to Teams.
You know what really killed Clippy? Do you know what the problem was?
What?
That stupid comedian Gilbert Gottfried played him in a live event.
Big mistake.
And I think it just ruined it
for
everybody.
Now you associate that horrible voice.
Yeah, that awful voice. You can just hear it screeching in the back of your mind.
I can see you're trying to make us a shopping list.
Yeah, no. I'm not kidding. I think that's what did it.
No.
Yeah.
No. There were
I don't think it would have harmed anything to have clippy stickers.
There's going to be an entire... Can you
put
your own...
anyone if we celebrated April Fool's Day either, Mary Jo. But
yeah, but harm.
That's true. I wasn't saying it's fun. I was just saying I didn't see the harm.
So you know that there's going to be an unofficial clippy pack for teams.
Yeah, there will.
So, but I appreciate the effort, Microsoft. I do. Because some of us still have PTSD from the old days.
Which would be a great name for a book written about Microsoft. We appreciated the effort.
So Tim Cook's book is going to be, I'm sorry, and Microsoft's book is going to be, we appreciate the effort. Maybe that's a book you can write, Paul, about when you retire.
He wants to write more books.
When you retire, not now. Because, you know, he's still... Still doing
the beat. Brad's going to catch up with me. He's got his one book under his belt there. I don't want him to
get close. Oh, God. What an amateur. How many, Paul? Like 50?
No, 30.
30.
One book for me, that was more than enough. One too many.
It's masochism. That's all it is.
It really is.
I feel that most writers are self-loathers. And that writing a book is the ultimate expression of how we feel about ourselves.
Unless you're getting Stephen King money. In that case.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That
right
makes
away.
It palatable.
Yeah.
Right.
I could only assume that that is true. It sounds true.
Here's the tip. Never, ever figure out your hourly rate for writing a book.
No.
It will be very depressing. It's
only about did you write a book, Leo? You did, right?
Oh, many. Yeah.
You've written many books. Okay.
I'm in the teens, not the teens.
When was the last one you published?
Oh, God. Like 15 years ago.
Right.
I learned my lesson. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yes.
So when Steve Jobs said people don't read anymore, you were like, right. I'm going to do something else.
I didn't have to wait for Steve Jobs to say anything. I knew.
Yeah.
From sales. I did a series of almanacs when I was at Tech TV.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I did a book with Gina Smith. That was the first book, which we wanted to call How Do You Get the Dog Hair Out of the Disk Drive, which I think is a great name. But the publisher elected to call it 101 Computer Answers You Need to Know.
Oh, God.
Well, and then I had to laugh.
That's how like an Apple TV show is going to get named.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that publisher's name. And then I had to laugh because Rich DeMuro, the guy who's on KTLA and fills in for me, just published his first book, and then I saw the title. I said, Chris.
Yikes. Oh, it's doomed.
101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone.
What's that thing you're holding in hand? It's like some kind of weird legacy format. What is that?
He's a nice guy.
Do you open it up and there's like a cutout in there? And like in the past, it would have held a bottle of alcohol of some kind, but now it's actually an iPhone case?
What are you talking about? This thing?
You know, like you cut open the inside of the book, so it looks like a book on the outside.
Yeah, I have liquor in here.
Yeah, no, you have an iPhone in there.
Wouldn't that be fun? You just carry a book around all the time and you have an iPhone in there.
Mm-hmm. And the text actually goes around the hole. See, that would be clever.
Right now, Alex Gumpel is doing something nobody has done for years, looking for my book. No, he's looking for my book. Nobody's done that in years, Alex. Oh well, it's in there somewhere. I may have burned all the copies. It's very possible.
No.
There is some of my crap up there. Like that's the video VHS videotape of me and Patrick telling you how to build a computer.
That's awesome. You put the ISA card in the ISA slot.
Solve your computer problems. Yeah, it's totally ISA. So
that's awesome.
I've been trying to do an ad for the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I'm getting a new Windows computer, and I want to be like the big boys. I am going to use Smart Deploy. Smart Deploy is what IT departments use for re-imaging unlimited computer models from one golden master. I'm sure all familiar. Anybody who's worked in IT is familiar with the idea of making a ghost. And, you know, you just bought 30, you know, Dell Precision desktops. They're all identical, and you made an image on one of them, and then you blast them to all of them. But what if you buy different brands or different setups? Smart Deploy does that. One golden image, but then it automatically, you can deploy different drivers for different machines. They offer one-click user data migration, so that means you can set up a new machine for a user and get the old data over. They have zero touch network deployment, so you can stay in your office, which I know everybody in IT wants to do, and then deploy over the network. You can image over the network. You can image over the internet. And application deployment's in there too, so you can have a set of standard tools. It is the most sophisticated, flexible way to deploy, whether you have 50 or 50,000 computers. They have a patented device driver injection technology and technician-built driver packages. You can call them platform packs to make your life easier. So there are platform packs for every possible bit of hardware, 1,200 of them, Lenovo, HP, Dell, all the major OEMs. So if you got a new model, you don't even have to set this up. You download the platform pack. So I'm getting a ThinkPad X1 Extreme. I'm glad I thought of this because I'm getting the new thing in the next week or so. I'll download the Lenovo pack, deploy my golden image, boom, right on my machine. And I'll have that image. I'll build that image so that in future, all the apps I want, all the line of business stuff we need, logins and everything can be right in there. Smart Deploy is the most reliable, easiest to use solution. It's been used to deploy over 2.2 million endpoints. It offers it's the only one that offers imaging over Wi-Fi. So you don't even have to be on the same network. You can deploy images, apps, updated drivers to your endpoints via the cloud using Dropbox, Google Drive, OneDrive, OneDrive for Business. Now, I'll tell you why that's great. You can send an email to an employee saying your image is on the OneDrive. Download it, install it, and you're good to go. And they don't have to know anything. They're step-by-step wizards to guide them through the process. Anything complicated like sysprep is handled automatically. Deployment guy can include a Q&A, you know, an FAQ, an answer file to automate tasks like domain join and computer naming. So you say, you understand it's like a little script. When you see computer name, use this. Hands-free, zero touch. And you'll love it. No ramp-up or training is necessary. You can migrate 100 computers to Windows 10 in under an hour because multicast is supported. Push one button. They're all updated. I talked to these guys up in Seattle. They're fantastic imaging and Windows experts. And they're there for you, too. Not just for me, but they're an email or phone call away. Nintendo uses this. UCLA uses this. Nissan uses it. Smart Deploy. Every IT department in the world should be using Smart Deploy. Make that dread task of computer imaging a lot less painful. You can get 15 free licenses with 1 year of support. That's $720 worth of free software at smartdeploy.com/windows. If you work at a company with 50 to 50,000 computers, smartdeploy.com/windows and get 15 free licenses with 1 year of support. I'm going to do it. I'm in a company. SmartDeploy.com/Windows. 15. You know what? I practically am a little mini IT department. I set up probably a dozen Windows computers a year. SmartDeploy.com/Windows. This is a great product. And we thank them for supporting Windows Weekly. Now, back to the show. And we talked about this yesterday on Security Now. In fact, Steve had a little image of the end-of-life support prompt for Windows 7. And it's not little.
No.
It's rather large.
I'm okay with
That's good.
Yeah, because it takes over the screen. It just doesn't sit there, right?
Yeah.
All right. So tell us about this. We're going to see this soon?
You're going to see it now. It was released as part of a software update that went out to Windows 7 last Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken.
Did you see it, Mary Jo? Have you received it?
No, because I don't think it turns on until sometime in April, right? Like, it may be on my machine. Yeah, but it's not. Like, it hasn't come up on my machine at all.
I see.
Yeah. But it's everything you thought, right?
Yeah, I was worried about this, but it looks fine.
Oh, you know, you're okay with it. You're good with it. Okay, good.
Yeah, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah,
I wish there was a better resolution for people. I think they're going to meet a lot of resistance across the board.
So yep. the the concern we had is that in years past, Microsoft had a very confusing, and they still, it's a little confusing. There's in the lower left, I'm going to see if I can find the image. In the lower left, yeah. There's a checkbox.
Don't show me this again.
Don't show me this again.
Don't show me this again. The language is clear. They've gotten in trouble in the past for a few things, but the most glaring was changing the expected behavior of closing a window does. You know, where it's like you're signaling that you want to keep getting this thing, you know, which is not the way most people's brains work. No. Worse than that, of course, they would, you know, it was almost like a comedy routine. Did you want to upgrade to the latest version of Windows? No, now installing the latest version of Windows. No, it's
yep.
There was some stuff like that. Or you just wake up in the morning and it's on your computer. You're like, what happened to Windows 7? It's gone. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of stuff. So this seems like a more reasonable approach to this kind of thing. But again, the issue here is it's not Microsoft's fault 100% for sure, but there's just no good answer for a lot of these people, I think. And it's going to be interesting to see how normal mm-hmm. people react when January comes.
Yep.
I think we're going to see a bunch of people sticking with it for a while.
Me too. I do too. You know, and I think they're just going to be like, you know what? I'm going to be okay. I'm running Security Essentials.
Barry Joe just installs software off the internet. And everything's fine.
Hey, nothing goes everything's wrong. Okay, guys. You know, nothing bad happened.
See? Yeah.
Nothing
just bad. Extrapolate that anecdotal evidence out to everything you do, and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have to say I'm kind of relieved. I mean, there isn't an okay button. You know, it's just there's a one button which says learn more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So...
And that goes to a Microsoft page. If you go to, I think it's Microsoft.com/Windows 7, mm-hmm. They'll describe in more detail the steps you need to take, which are basically step one, back up your data and your photos. Step two, buy a new computer.
Right. You know? Yeah, yep. We saw that. Yeah, that was kind of, buy a computer. Mm-hmm. Jeez.
Well, sorry.
What else are they going to say? They're not going to say, they could say upgrade.
Look, the problem here is that, right, so... The people in the know will complain, and rightfully so, that there are a lot of configurations of Windows 7 PCs out in the world that probably would have no problem running Windows 10.
That
clunker they show there was the classic, like 1-inch thick. This thing looks like it's from the late 1990s. You know, the picture of the computer they have there, it's unbelievable.
It's really old Toshiba.
I suspect most Windows 7 computers look a little more modern than that one does, but whatever, you know.
It still has a close box though in the upper right. So if you close it, you'll get it again.
Yes.
If you check in the lower left, do not remind me again and close it. Mm-hmm. That's what you're supposed to do if you don't want to see anymore.
That's right. Okay. It's okay.
Yeah. It'd be nice if they had two buttons, learn more and okay, don't tell me anymore or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be more logical.
To their credit though, I think it's okay because really what they want is people to deal with this, you know, and the learn more thing is the only obvious big thing to click. And right. and really, yeah. if yeah, you are using Windows 7 and you've never
you should deal with it.
This,
yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
should at least try to understand what the issue is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay.
Now, if you go to that Windows 7 page, like down under the FAQ on that page, there's one little item that says, can I upgrade Windows 7 to 10 for free? No. Mm-hmm.
It actually,
You can, except just between
it clicks,
us kids.
It goes to like a YouTube video where someone just screams no.
Really?
No, that would be
just
funny.
Between us kids, you can in some cases, right?
Yeah, you can. This came up last time and we were going back and forth about it, but that retail key thing still works.
Right.
Yeah, but no one has one of those really.
So under your computer, you know, the Dells have mm-hmm. little Windows key for Windows 7. That doesn't work?
So my understanding is that it doesn't. But as we had that discussion a week or two ago, somebody said that that does work. So
yeah, that's what I keep hearing.
It's a hard thing to test. So
try
for example,
it. Try it.
Right. It's not nothing. You don't get hurt by trying it. You know.
Chat room saying it again. OEM keys do work. Yeah. Obviously, they don't work in every case or people would.
Here's the problem. So it was a couple of problems. Like one is from my perspective, when I write something, when I want to say something in a very absolute term, I have to know that it's true.
Right.
So
in every case,
the fact that this worked for somebody, this is not something I can test.
Right.
I don't have 1700 Windows 7 PC configurations where I can type in those keys and make sure they work. So I just don't want anyone to rely on this. That's all.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
The thing is, if it doesn't work, it's okay because nothing happens. It's fine, right? It doesn't hurt to try.
Yeah. And how would you
absolutely say?
So what you would do is write down that key. Or what I would do, I'm more modern, take a picture.
Yes.
Thank you, Mary Jo. And then download the Windows Media Creation Tool from Microsoft and Microsoft only. Put a make a USB key with the Windows 10 installer on it.
Now, the thing is, you know, depending on the system, so the activation thing is black magic too, right? So... it's something because I don't have Windows 7, I probably have a couple of them somewhere, but, you know, it's hard to, I do run the the Windows 10 media creation tool a lot, but I do it on Windows 10 PCs today, right? So that's going to activate every time. They're not going to ask me for a product key. It's fine. So if you do it like on bare hardware, if you do it on a Windows 7 PC, what's it going to do?
I don't know. Yeah.
If you run I don't either, off the top of my head. So you may not have to put in the product key, right?
Right.
It's possible. You could just run this thing, upgrade it, and it will just work. You might want to do, you know, if you do something dangerous, like I'm going to boot with this thing, I'm going to wipe out the Windows 7 system, I'm going to clean install Windows 10, and when it asks me to put in the product key, I'm going to do it. And if that doesn't work, you better back up that computer because otherwise you're going to have a non-working system or a non-activated system and you're going to have something to figure out there. So I can't sit here and say, oh, yeah, it's fine. Everything's fine. Don't worry about it. I think the thing we need to remember with this issue is the audiences that are going to be involved. We talk about Mary Jo's mother a lot, for example. I have never met the woman. I have a hard time imagining her upgrading a Windows computer. But
she will not be able to.
No. But and I think for a huge percentage of the audience, a huge part of the audience, this is just something. It's not going to happen. It doesn't matter what you could do. They're not going to do it. So
I mean, the only way it could happen is if somebody comes to their home or business and says, let me do this for you, right?
Now, the hope if that happens is that person knows how to make good decisions, is technical enough to know the issues involved, knows to back up the computer using whatever software that, you know, the built-in Windows 7 backup tool, the third-party tool, whatever it might be, that they're not going to do something destructive to that computer and then not be able to get it back. That's all we can do is hope. So, you know, I can't control that, but... I think what Microsoft is going for here is a good experience, as good of an experience as you can have. And I think what they've, based on their own telemetry, they kind of understand that the majority of PCs out in the world that are running Windows 7 today either cannot run Windows 10 or cannot do so effectively, and they would not be good candidates for upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
Because as bad as it is to say that we're not supporting this thing and you need to buy a new computer, if they upgrade something and the experience is worse, that's a problem that Microsoft has created for you. And now they've created a problem for themselves because they're going to be coming to you for support and for help, and that's expensive. So, I know. I keep going back to the same thing. It's really tough when the solution is to spend a bunch of money. But if an individual bought a computer that was running Windows 7, it was several years ago. And I know it's not 100%, but a lot of those computers, it's just not going to be a good experience.
Yeah.
And there really have been improvements in computers. Leo was just describing a crazy workstation class laptop.
Yeah.
Not that everyone would buy something like that, but even in a $6,800 computer.
I feel like they're also a lot cheaper than they were when you bought your Windows 7 PC.
Well, yeah, you know, the power for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to research this, the two of us, Mary Jo, because somebody asked us this yesterday, and I'm really mixed on this, which is that back in the day, if you bought a Windows 7 computer in 2009, the answer about support was, this thing will be supported for 10 years, period. It just will be.
Yep.
During the first 5 years, we may release upgrades, feature upgrades, those certainly service packs, whatever. During the final 5 years, we will release just security updates, quality updates. And that was the story, and it was always the case. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter if what the hardware was, nothing mattered. That was the story. With Windows 10, and it's not just because of Windows 10, but things have become a lot more nuanced. We don't really have that kind of a support policy anymore. Microsoft uses very vague descriptions about support. They'll say, as long as the hardware is supported, which is not a thing you can look up. And I, you know, we, the example we always use now is the Spectre Meltdown stuff, because I think that changed everything. There are classes of Intel and AMD CPUs that Microsoft is simply not going to support. You know, and it's sorry, you know, I mean, my thing might have been viable 6, 7, whatever number of years ago, but they're not doing it anymore. And so you get into a situation where you try to run the update thing and it says, you know, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. So it's just, there's a vagueness to the support lifecycle now that didn't exist before. And it's, and the whole, the Windows as a service kind of thing, I think has complicated matters because there are different versions of Windows 10.
I know. I just went to the lifecycle page, Windows lifecycle page, and you look at the list of how long each of the feature updates is supported. The dates are all over the place, right? It's like 1809, end of service for Home Pro and Pro for workstations. Then there's a different date of end of service for enterprise and education. And that's true for all 1809, 1803, 1709. All these dates are different. Not all features in an update will work. It's like, there's a lot of caveats.
And also remember, there have been situations where the first couple of versions of Windows 10 worked on certain classes of CPUs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden Microsoft drops support for them in future versions. Yep. So I'm just going to make up a version, but maybe 1803 came and now you cannot upgrade to that version. You're stuck on the previous version, but that directly impacts your support lifecycle because that version of Windows 10 is only supported till some random date, which is not 10 years or 5 years in the future.
Yeah.
It's a couple of years maybe.
Yeah.
And then what? You know, it's I think this is part of the issue with the Windows 7 upgrade thing, because there are going to be people listening to this or watching this who are saying, but it will work fine on my computer, whatever it is. It will work fine. It will work fine. And maybe you're right, but you know what? When 1907 comes out, or whatever version, 1909, whatever it is, you know, or, you know, next year's version or whatever, 20H1.
Yeah, 20H1.
Maybe that's when they stop supporting that CPU or that integrated graphics chipset or blah, whatever it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We just have no way of knowing. There's no, and it's not, again, it's not Microsoft hiding it. I think it's so complex and impossible to state with any certainty whether it's, because it's not just the version of Windows, it's the hardware configuration.
It is. No, remember what happened on my S7? I tried to put 1803 on it, I think it was. Mm-hmm. No, I forget what version it was.
One of so it's the situation I just described.
Yeah, it just could not install. And now I'm in an endless boot loop on that thing. And I haven't tried to do anything about it, but I'm like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know why it didn't work.
I mean, imagine someone, you know, there could be a lot of people don't back up. They do an in-place upgrade to Windows 10, and then that happens. Now what?
Yeah, right.
What do you say to that person? You know,
but you don't even know why. Like, is it because of the drive? Is it because of the chip? Is it because of, you know, lack of a driver? You don't even know what is stopping it from happening. And there's no definitive list of this machine won't support this version. I've never seen it if that list exists. So,
I'm sure they have a really complicated. Yeah, they have a flow chart somewhere, you know, at Microsoft support headquarters and whatever country it's
gigantic.
In.
And it's a 1,000 row Excel.
Yeah, it's like
if
HP, if, you know, you go down the list. Yeah.
Yep. Fun time.
Microsoft keeping me gainfully employed since 1994.
Thank you, Microsoft. Thank you. Did you do the virtual desktop?
Yeah, virtual desktop's out. Whoop.
Whoop, whoop. That's it.
She has now.
That's all.
Windows Virtual Desktop, which Microsoft announced last year at Ignite, I believe. And the public preview was supposed to be out before the end of last year. It never came out. No one knew where it was. It came out last week, finally. So this is a very interesting product for a number of people who are running Windows 7 in businesses, because if you want to use this new Windows Virtual Desktop service, it's on Azure, you're going to be able to run Windows 7, Windows 10, Office 365 Pro Plus apps all virtually, as well as your Windows Server remote desktop services, desktop apps. So this is going to be really great for people who are like, I haven't really tested my apps and I'm afraid, but I have line of business apps and I need to keep running them. So you could go and license Windows Virtual Desktop when it goes to the mainstream before the end of this year and use it to do that. The other benefit is if you do it that way, you get the extended support updates for Windows 7 for 3 years for no additional cost. So it's a win-win if you're one of those companies who are not quite ready to go to Windows 10 yet. But yeah, it looks at people who are trying it out are saying, yeah, it looks good. It also lets you have the multi-session Windows 10 as part of the service. So there's a lot of interesting case studies and things you could do. We don't know the exact pricing yet on this, but Microsoft did say if you're already licensed to run things like Microsoft 365, F1, E3, E5, Windows 10 Enterprise, E3, E5, or you're a Windows VDA customer, you're all set. Like all you have to do is buy an Azure subscription, pay for your compute and storage, and you don't need to pay any additional licensing fees for Windows 7 or Windows 10. Pretty good.
Woohoo!
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yep. That's
Windows
10 19H1. It never ends. Yeah. We just keep going.
Well, yeah. So, you know, these things are always complicated these days, but the other day, Microsoft released the latest build of 19H1 to the slow ring, which indicates to me, because it came after two completely identical builds to the fast ring, other than one fix, that this is the build they intended to be the release. And so we'll call that what they used to call that kind of thing was RC1, right? Release Candidate 1. We think this is it. Actually, I guess it would be RC2 because they incremented it one when they found a problem. And so when I wrote this originally, I thought, this is going to be it. But then they found a problem. So yep. They might have to increment it again. So yeah. We'll see how they fix that.
That may not be RC. Yep.
Well, but, you know, there's two different ways they can do it, right? So they could, you know, in other words, if 18.3.6.2 is not it, they could increment the build, 18.3.6.3 maybe. Mm-hmm. They could also just release a cumulative update that fixes that problem. And if that's the case, then this one is the final build. But because the install, see, it's not really clear how the install problem manifests itself. If it's only on upgrades, actually, it doesn't matter. If it's on upgrades or clean installs, they would have to release a new build.
Yeah. They're close to RTM, though.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I mean, supposedly they want to RTM in March. So we're almost done with March. It ends this week, right?
It's creeping up on us. How embarrassing would it be if April came and they hadn't finished this?
Didn't that happen once where it was called? Right, it was called 1803, right? But it actually RTM'd in April or something. Whatever.
Yep.
It's just a name.
Actually, it RTM'd in April and then it RTM'd again in May because they kept screwing
up. That's right.
Yeah.
Now, is this one of those things where be a seeker, don't be a seeker? Are they going to do it that way again? Or?
Oh, you bet they are.
I bet they are. Yep.
Yeah, the other thing, and actually, I didn't add this to the notes, but, you know, AdDuplex came out with their monthly report of Windows 10 version usage, and the latest version as of today, which is 18.09, has been proceeding very slowly. There was 1 month, I think it was January, where the usage in it doubled, but since then, February and now March, it's actually gone up very slowly. Mm-hmm. So as of today, roughly 25%, I think it's maybe 26% of Windows 10 PCs out in the wild are running the latest version of Windows 10. That's really slow because this thing has been out for several months and the next version is about to come out. So we're going to get into a unique situation.
Yeah, they still haven't declared 18.09 as, quote, targeted release for businesses. Mm-hmm. So it's not even really, like, you know how they always say it's ready for business use now? Yeah.
It's very likely that either will not happen or it will happen after the next version is already out.
Yeah. I think it is going to happen because they said they're going to update. They're going to do it quietly, but they're going to update the release information page to say it.
I think they have to do it because it's for businesses. But
me too.
The interesting half of this is going to be the consumer part because this has never happened before. But I think there's going to be I think the largest part of the user base is actually going to skip the last version.
Yeah. And that's okay, right? That'll be okay because you'll just get when you get 1903, your machine will just first install 1809, then it'll install 1903 automatically, right?
Yeah, you can play this game by yourself at home if you want. You can take a Windows 10 computer, stick it in a closet for 2 years, pull it out. The hilarity that ensues.
It shouldn't when have to updates, really just, do 1803 and 1809.
It should only be like Delta.
Yeah, or, I mean, or, right? I would guess that everything you would need is in 19H1, but who knows?
You know what? The first time I heard the term Delta updating for Microsoft, I believe it was 2003. They were talking about, it was 2003 R2. It was this release where they had like a branch office update. It was part of the R2 release. Mm-hmm. And the brilliance of this was we don't have to replace individual files. We can replace parts of files. And so we can examine every single file on the computer. We can look at the parts of the file and we can just do these little Delta updates. And this is going to speed up updating, you know, and it made sense because these were poorly connected computers, whatever. Mm-hmm. So what is it now? 16 years later, 15 years, whatever. We're still talking about this. Could they do Delta? Apparently. But we have electric cars now, and I don't know. We're still working on this. I don't know why this is such a hard computer science problem. But.
Here's an interesting question. I'm going to have a brand new Windows computer in the next couple of weeks.
Yep.
When you get a new computer, am I wrong? I mean, usually the first thing I do is go to the Windows update page and make sure.
That's the right thing to do.
So, yeah. but now I'm a seeker.
I see what you're saying. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. But here's the thing, you know, timing is everything and it's not something you can predict as a consumer. You get a computer, it was manufactured on some date. It could have been 30 days ago. It could have been 6 months ago. You don't know. It came with some version of Windows 10, 1803, 1809 now maybe. I've had a lot of computers where, because of the timing of the acquisition, you do exactly what you just described and you actually get the next version of Windows.
Yeah, you always want to do that, right?
Yeah. Normally, the good experience that most people have or the experience that most people have is very good because what you have is a cumulative update, right? So maybe that computer was manufactured in May and you bought it in September. You don't get, you know, June's updates, July's updates, August's update. You get September's updates. It's a cumulative. It's all in there together. And, you know, you get a security update, you get a, you know, maybe a couple of other things. You could have a driver update that's occurred since that, you know, computer was manufactured, whatever it is. But that's pretty much it. And that's, it's a good experience.
No, that's how it should be.
Yes. That's the one thing they've gotten very right.
I can remember times when with a new computer, this happens with other devices too, but Windows always seemed to be really prone to this, where you'd have multiple reboots. You'd have multiple updates.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that's very atypical in Windows today. I will give Windows credit for formalizing this thing that has happened on all device types. You know, the Microsoft mentality has infected the world. You buy a smart TV and you have to reboot it first thing to install an update. Or any device you bring home, there's a software update. Any consumer electronics device, you know, it's the PC-ification of everything that we own. You know, you can probably buy a cappuccino maker today that has a software update before you can make your first cup of coffee. It's just infested, I think, our whole, you know, everything. But over the Windows side, yeah, we finally got that right. So, I mean, that's working pretty well.
My timing might be bad because if 19H1 comes out at this, you know, around the time that I get this new computer, I'm going to be seeking.
No. Don't worry. It won't be rolling out to mainstream until probably April, May, around then. So you're going to get your PC before that.
The problem is, Leo, like a lot of people listening to this, know what's going on, right? There's another issue that wouldn't affect a normal human being. But let's say you could buy an HP computer, Lenovo, Dell, it doesn't matter. For some reason, there's some hardware configuration on that device that it actually is not shipping with the latest version of Windows. Maybe it comes with 1803 still, or something like that, right? Now, you buy the thing, you update it, you're like, oh, that's weird. It has 1803. It doesn't have 1809. No one would ever notice this, right? No one normal would ever notice it. But you might notice it. You're like, oh, that's kind of odd. And then the next day, they're like, yeah, 19H1 is out. You're like, I don't even have 1809. You know, this computer, what's going on? And that happens too, right? That's the other, you know, you never know.
Mm-hmm. I just don't want to be a premature seeker.
No one does.
You have to, unfortunately,
I have to. It's just the way it is.
Well, you don't have to, but you
and it
you're
won't
going
offer
to.
it won't offer it 19H1 to me if it's not right for
never,
it.
Never say
right.
Never. Oh, yes, you're right. I'm sorry. That's true.
Yeah. Right. If there's something blocking you, or like Microsoft or the OEM has said, like, no, don't give it to those people. Different. Like 1809 still not being offered to Surface, right?
Which is so weird.
Is that true? For certain Surface devices.
I believe so.
I have a hard time.
My Go has 1809. I'm pretty sure my Go has 1809. Actually, no, I just went to the insider room. I won't know. And there's no better time, if you think about it, to apply a big update like this than to a brand new computer, because it's less likely to be crudded up with stuff that's incompatible anyway.
That's true. But again, another thing they've done right, we're describing two different experiences, because there are people who are enthusiasts or experts who will want that. That's exactly what they want. And yes, for those people, that is, well, for any people, that's the best time to do it. The way these things would normally install for normal people is that it just kind of happens in the background. And as we move forward to the new versions of Windows 10, they've actually made this process a lot better, so that when you actually do have to reboot the computer, that part of the install actually only takes a couple of minutes. That's a huge improvement. That used to be an hour-long process where the computer was offline.
Yeah,
by offline, I don't mean not connected to the internet, although it isn't. I mean literally, you're not at the Windows desktop. It's got that blue screen up, the good one with the updating, installing updates 27%, whatever. That part of the upgrade is very short now. So even that's a much better experience than it used to be. We'll get there.
Yeah.
I'm not against getting H1. I just,
Yeah. Well, I will you want to make sure it's the right time. Yeah.
So hold that thought, Leo, because my tip might be of interest to you.
I shall hold it in my head. Windows. So there's a wonderful folklore story about the graphing calculator on Macintosh. Did you ever read that story? Folklore.org? Apple, I think the graphing calculator, when Apple first came out, it had a graphing calculator.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the details.
I don't remember the story. It makes sense they would want it on the Mac because the Mac was graphical.
It's graphical,
nothing else was. And,
But then they killed it.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy who wrote it, I think he even got fired, stuck around, kind of took over in an office. Nobody asked him any questions and continued to write it. I got to find this story because it's a wild story. And people on the Macintosh love the graphing calculator. I mean, that's, that was considered to be a big deal. Let me see if I can find it on here. This is Andy Hertzfeld's lovely page about this, the original folklore of Macintosh graphing calculator. No, maybe I may be imagining all of this. I only mention it because there is, in fact, an update to Windows Calculator, the simplest, dumbest little program ever. Thank God it's now open source.
Actually, Leo, the simplest, dumbest little program is Notepad because – I don't mean that in a mean way. Windows Calculator has been updated. It's a UWP app. It's actually a modern app,
Yes.
The fact that they're adding this capability to it is crazy. Yeah, I can't even imagine what the point of this is. But, cool. I mean, and if anyone is wondering if this was a direct result of Microsoft open sourcing Calculator and then taking feedback from people who viewed the source code, the answer, of course, is no. This has nothing to do with that.
So it's a guy named Ron Avitsur, and I found his story. It was shipped on the original PowerPC computers. He was a contractor for Apple on a secret project that was canceled, but his card continued to work. So he kept going in and finished it. He said, I had sympathizers. Apple's engineers who knew that I was there thought what I was doing was cool. Whenever I gave demos, my colleagues said, I wish I'd had that when I was in school. So he continued to write it, and Apple never released it, so he started shipping it as a third-party app.
Huh.
In September, Apple facilities tried to move people into our officially empty offices. They noticed us.
Yep.
The facilities woman assumed I had merely changed projects and had not yet moved to my new group, something that happened all the time. She asked what group I worked in. When I told her the truth, she was not amused. She called security, had them cancel our badges, and told us to leave the premises. But we were saved by the layoffs that began that month. 20% of Apple's workers lost their jobs. But Greg and I were safe because we weren't on the books in the first place. We didn't exist. Afterwards, there were plenty of empty offices. We found two. Started sneaking into the building every day, waiting out front for real employees to arrive, casually tailgating through the door. We wore our old badges as decoys.
Wow.
It's the wildest story you ever heard. I mean, the guy basically snuck into Apple to continue a project which was canceled. It goes on and on.
From the Office movie, he wasn't getting paid. You know, the stapler guy?
Yeah. In my office. So in January 1994, Graphing Calculator was finished and has been part of the Macintosh ever since.
Really?
Even though he wrote it illicitly.
Well, Windows has finally caught up to the Mac, well, baby.
Actually, that's the last line of the story. We wanted to release a Windows version as part of Windows 98, but sadly, Microsoft has effective building security.
Yes, they do. Hard to sneak in there.
Back then, they didn't. I used to sneak into Microsoft buildings all the time.
Are you kidding?
No. You've heard my Hitler Youth story, right? That was Windows. Let's see, what was that? That was, well, Windows NT 5. It would have been Windows 2000. That was after 1998.
Yeah.
Oh, he's
I never
really
had
easy.
That luck. I got let in accidentally to a building.
Oh, Mary Jo,
once.
I can explain this. You're a woman. See, I look like everyone who works at Microsoft.
Right. You fit right in.
In and out of, back then, especially, right? I mean, you know what I mean?
When Microsoft would. When I used to go to Redmond a lot, when I lived in Seattle, to go like to meetings on campus, they would actually escort me to the door of the bathroom and wait outside the door.
See, you walk in the door to Microsoft building, like the red alarm light starts spinning around.
If it was a woman, she actually came in the bathroom who was escorting
Yikes.
Me and waited.
Yikes.
What?
Yeah, I'm not
like
kidding.
You're going to exfiltrate secret documents through
I'm
the...
like, what am I going to do in here?
What? Wow. That's hysterical.
No, but then you go to the New York office and there's no security. Like you have to pass the front desk. Once you get past the front desk, they're like, yeah, go up to 5. And then you're just walking around by yourself in the building. Like, yep. So yeah.
Oh boy.
That's why this Apple story to me is like, wait, what?
Well, you got to remember what the time frame. This is the early 80s. I mean,
yeah. They got it on the Gold Master. He had finished it, right? He's trying to figure out, well, how do we get it on the Macintoshes with Apple without Apple knowing? So he found out that if they get it on the Gold Master, mm-hmm. it'll just ship. Nobody will ask any questions. It'll be there.
Right. Right.
So he had a friend who was the guy who did the final copy of the Gold Master, you know, manufactured the Gold Master before they FedExed it to the manufacturer. Remember that? That's why we called it the Gold Master.
Yeah.
And he put it on there for him.
Wow.
It shipped to every Macintosh computer, even though it was a complete
No, that's good stuff. It's good stuff.
It's a
great
story.
Where is the guy now, though? Is he an Apple employee now or no?
He's in jail.
I think they sell it now. Yeah, they licensed it. They made everything legal by licensing it to Apple later. And they now have paid versions and commercial releases of Graphing Calculator. And you can get it for...
In many ways, what they did was ship malware.
Yeah, I mean, you really couldn't do it this day. And by the way, their Graphing Calculator is available on Windows now. PacificT.com. PacificT.com.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is the T stand for trespassers?
Yeah, it should. Tech. And if you go to the website, it is an old school website, man. That is old school.
That's hilarious.
Isn't that a great story?
That is a great story.
Well, UWP has apparently advanced to the state where it can emulate a Mac from 1984. So don't ever be told that the platform has not improved.
Now, if it's really UWP, I could run it on any platform, right? It doesn't have to be a Windows product anymore.
No, UWP, not PWA.
Oh, PWA, UWP, sorry. Yeah, I always confuse that.
PWA could do this years ago. This is new to UWP. It's
right. Okay. All right. Our first developer interview, when was that?
Well, so I'm surprised you don't remember this because last summer we were talking about maybe talking to some developers. And we even lined up a couple of folks who were interested in talking to us. And then we never did it. And I met with Corel back in February about Corel Draw Suite in 2019. And the gentleman that we spoke to, Gerard, was one of the people who had offered to talk to us. And so Mary Jo came along, and we finally had our first developer interview. Things happen slowly here on Windows Weekly, Leo.
No, but we were talking about how we bring up developer issues a lot, and we're like, we should be talking to developers more because,
you know,
we're kind of talking third hand.
We have opinions,
right?
You know, whatever. I mean, you know, from the outside, I look, it's astonishing how much developer information Microsoft puts out. You know, during the course of a Windows Insider version of Windows as it's being developed, not only are there fast and slow ring and skip aheads and release preview builds, but they're also releasing new versions of the SDK. And if you ever look at the release notes for those things, many times over the course of development of Windows 10 version, it's astonishing how much stuff goes into each of these SDK versions. And so, you know, the kind of question I had, and we had, I think, is you know, whether developers actually out in the world, Windows-focused developers, even cared about any of this stuff, you know? And of course, part of the problem with Windows 10 is that, in the beginning at least, these new Windows 10 features were literally only for Windows 10. And so if there are 1.5 billion Windows computers out in the world and 300 or 400 or 5 million, you know, whatever the number is any given year, are running Windows 10, why would a developer choose to limit the audience for the product by shipping these features that only work on some versions of Windows? Now, as it becomes bigger, now it's 800 million, it's over half, you can make a better case, whatever. So we finally discussed this stuff with him. I ended up putting it in print, right? We didn't. The original intention, I think, was to have it come.
Yeah, maybe have we could on the show. Insert, or you could just record it at Rattle and Hum, which is apparently where you are.
Well, actually, I did record it at Rattle and Hum, and I got to tell you, that's not a recording.
It's too noisy. Okay, because I'd be glad, you know, if you've got an audio, just send it to us, and we can edit it in.
Yeah, it's really it was a neat talk. It's a really, you know, it's a nice long interview.
Well, this is great. It's also fine on, you know, it's at therot.com.
Yeah, but the point of this is, you know, so in other words, this Corel is interesting, right? Because Corel has a bunch of different products. They have some software that goes back 30 years. They've been building and building and building on top of this thing. They're not going to recreate Corel Photo Draw from scratch, you know, in UWP, right? Or Corel Draw, sorry. It's a big, big program. It would be like doing that for Microsoft Office and then replace the old one with the new one. Like, that's probably never going to happen. But it was an interesting conversation from my perspective just because they really are Windows-focused. Windows matters to them a lot, obviously. They are looking at what Microsoft is adding, and they're picking and choosing things based on a schedule that is not necessarily the schedule I ever would have thought of, which is, you know, they'll announce something today and they're looking a year or two down the road saying, yeah, we're going to do this because we know by that point people will actually have this stuff, you know. You know, we're talking about when 19H1 is going to come out. Well, there are features in 19H1 that Corel might want to add to their product, but that thing's not going to be broadly deployed until basically a year from now. So they're not going to worry about it now. It's not important to add those features now. And they're also looking at replacing homegrown functionality with technology that's built into Windows when possible. So things, if you think of like something simpler, like a spell check. There's a spell check dictionary built into Windows 10 that is not available in previous versions of Windows. So on Windows 10, that's the one you get in Corel's products because it's better just to use the thing that's built in. Now, Windows 7, Windows 8.1, they have to use their old legacy one because that's, you know, that's how that works. And that's, you know, how they kind of do things. I thought it was... That was a really interesting talk. I mean,
I'm reading it. It looks great. Yeah, it's really. So is Corel a French company or he's just French?
No, it's Canadian.
Canadian. That's it. French Canadian. Okay.
I mean, right now, even calling the company Canadian is kind of crazy because they bought so much stuff. You know, they own WinZip and a bunch of other programs. They just bought Parallels recently as well.
Yeah, they're coming back to the Mac, which is kind of interesting.
They came back to the Mac with the native app, you know. And that's an interesting example right there, because once you decide to make a native app on the Mac, you know, obviously that's a lot of work. And we talked about that and why they did it the way they did it. You know, a PWA is probably not quite there yet, but you could picture it going in that direction in the future maybe. And they are looking at, they're doing PWAs, and they're probably not going to do a lot of UWP stuff. But it's an interesting talk. I, you know, again, like I said, we have opinions, but I don't sit here and write software code all day. And I don't have some user base to worry about. I'm not coming up with new app ideas. So my opinions are only worth so much, but I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, I'm agreeing. It's fascinating. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somebody in the trenches really doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Nice. And I think that the come on, let's go to Rattle and Hum probably really helps get people in the door. You know,
I mean,
he brought us some beer from Canada, which was really nice.
Yeah,
I know that was nice. Then I'm like, do you want a beer? And he's like, I don't drink. Didn't he say I don't drink? And I'm like, we brought.
I should publicly acknowledge the classic Thurrott Chew and Screw that I did that day, because.
Oh yeah, you did.
We had lunch, and that was the day of the massive snowstorm. And my wife was in town, and she had a separate meeting, so she kind of showed up at the end of it. And we had to get on the bus, and all the buses were canceled because of the snowstorm.
Right.
And then she looked at the site, and the company said, "We're going to run one bus.
Last bus
It's going to go to every stop." And it was leaving in like, I think it was like 8 minutes. So we had to bolt on out of there. And he was gracious enough to pick up the
wheelchair. He did. Okay. No, I'm like, I'll pay. And he's like, no, I'll pay. I was like, wait.
I'm serious. This is my pitch to you. Mm-hmm. I think a series of Rattle and Hum developer interviews with you and Mary Jane.
Where all of a sudden there's a bus problem and Paul has to bolt.
I will pick up lunch. We'll even send you gear if you want so you can do it like in a corner. We'll call it, I don't know. Can Rattle and Hum.
Chew and Screw.
Chew and Screw with Rattle and Hum. That's actually got a little ring to it.
Yeah, right?
Chew and Screw with Rattle and Hum. So it'd be a great podcast. I would like to do that.
I certainly intend to talk to more developers. I am sorry this one took so long. I am very interested in this topic. So,
You're going to be coming to New York a few times
I am.
Soon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Should set up my pedicure in New York.
To get the bus to New York? Is it a 4-hour ride?
Well, if there's a snowstorm, Leo, it takes 4.5 hours.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
On a normal day, it takes a little under 2 hours.
Still a bit of a hike.
Yeah, but it's doable. And, you know, especially if you're going to stay, you know, even if you stay one night, it makes it really doable. But I go in for the day a lot of times. It's a little tiring, but it's workable.
Hey, you're close enough. That's cool. If I were close to the
city, better than Boston. I mean, Boston was 3.5 hours at the minimum.
Yeah.
From Dedham? Train. I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
What?
3.5 hours on the Amtrak, yeah.
From Lehigh Valley?
No, that was from Boston to New York City.
Oh, to New York. I get it. Yeah.
Back in the day, before the Acela Express, it was 5 hours.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember those days.
Those were long days.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, I'm telling you, this would be a great show. We're looking for new material.
Wow.
Chew and Screw with Battle and Hum. And you could pretend that your names are Rattle and Hum.
Exactly.
Right.
Figure out who's whom.
I would have to be Rattle, I think. I'm a mess.
Chew and Screw with Rattle and Hum. I'm telling you, I think I could. Spotify's looking for shows, man. We could make $1 million. It doesn't sound like it used to. We can make $1 million. It sounds like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm going to quit my day job for that. No. $1 billion. Now that's money. Yeah. Our show today brought to you by the best little security company ever. We use it here at Twit to protect our whole business, our whole network. You know the name, I'm sure. We've recommended them for years, Sophos. Sophos, for years, we told people to get the independent virus scan at Sophos. Good stuff, but they have really strong business, intrusion detection and things like that. And, filters. We have a Sophos hardware to protect our network. One of the things Sophos done lately, and I think this is really interesting, because of this battle, back and forth battle between hackers and security, software and hardware, it's just, you know, they get a little better, we get a little better, they get a little better, they're starting to use AI, and in particularly deep learning, to take all the data from all of these attacks across all of the different surfaces and understand a little better what it looks like, so that you can model it in a way that you can prevent attacks even before you kind of know about the exploit that they're going to use. Or it's more than heuristics. It's actually artificial intelligence and machine learning and a neural network. And with this technology, Sophos has just leapfrogged not only the bad guys, but everybody else. Just ranked number one, an independent security test done by SE Labs, best protection ratings across the board, both for large enterprises and small businesses. So if you're a business, you should absolutely be looking at Sophos. But now, and I really think this is interesting, they've also got a home product with the same technology from all the data points they've got from protecting millions of businesses. They've made a premium version for Macs and PCs. It's called Sophos Home. It delivers real-time protection from the latest everything, ransomware attacks, malicious software. It can detect hacking attempts of all kinds. It's incredibly easy to use, and it works on the network, which is really cool. So if it's one laptop or an entire network in your house, or even a network across, you know, around the world, across multiple sites, Sophos works for them all. You sign up for a single account. You protect all the Macs and all the PCs in your home from a single console. It's cloud-based, so you can use it to keep relatives secure, even if they're thousands of miles away. I can log into my mom's network, manage her security, clean up threats, keep the system safe. This is exactly what you need. Sophos' tagline is security made simple. That means they pay a lot of attention to ease of use. So it is. It's very easy to use. You log in from your browser. There's no software to install. It's you log in from your browser, and you start securing your systems today. Whether you're a home user or a large, actually there is software to install, but I mean you interface it through the browser and your account is global. It's in the cloud. Whether you're a home user or a large enterprise, Sophos has you covered. In fact, some of the largest businesses in the world use Sophos to stay protected from those big ransomware attacks that are devastating businesses. It says here last year, but it's happening this year too. Not to us. I don't have to worry. We got Sophos on the job. Third-party reviewers consistently rank Sophos among the best cybersecurity providers. And I love this synchronized security, which means you can manage all your Sophos products from one cloud-based console. Get a free trial today or a free security scan. They still offer that at Sophos.com. S-O-P-H-O-S. Sophos.com. We thank Sophos for their support of Windows. What's the matter? Weekly. What's the matter? Paul's having a breakdown.
Boy. One of the weird things about writing like I do is that I will often come across something I've written on the internet, and before I realize that it's something that I wrote, I'm like, this is kind of interesting.
This is well done. Whoever this guy is.
Yeah, sometimes. But then the one I just...
Oh, boy.
I was searching for something, and what I came across was an article I wrote, and the title is beautiful. It says, Google Weirdo Criticizes Windows 10. Like an actual headline I wrote.
Oh.
And I just, it's just, sorry.
Paul, you break yourself up. You crack yourself up.
Yeah, no, it's nice when you have dementia like I do. You don't remember. And so I could be reamused by things that amused me.
That's so funny.
God, I'm funny.
Oh, I'm good.
God, I am so good.
Whoever this guy is good. Oh, it's me.
Of course. Well, that makes sense now. I tell my kids, no one loves you like you do.
No. Nope.
You know.
So let's talk about Surface Hub 2.
Yep.
I want one of these.
We're getting close to the first wave of the Surface Hub 2 coming out. We got invitations yesterday to an April event in New York City. And
on a Wednesday.
The invitations are very vague. Yeah, a Wednesday. Wednesday, April 17th.
Oh, boy.
The invitations were vague. They just said, Microsoft and Steelcase invite you to experience the new ways to work better together. But if you think about what does Steelcase do? Steelcase builds some of the accessories and office furniture, like the rolling frames and the mounts for the Surface Hub. So I'm like, yeah.
They make the don't they make the actual Surface Hub stand for the two?
Yeah. Yep, I think so. Those rolling mounts, the rolling frames. I mean, like you know the ones you can roll in.
Well, everything
the room
we
and
saw when they showed it off before, that kind of not quite tripod looking thing, but a stand. That's a steel case design.
Yeah, it is. It is. So what we think is going to happen at April 17th is we think we're going to get to see the Surface Hub 2S, not the 2X. So the 2S is the same, basically the same software as what's in Surface Hub 1, but in a new body of a device. It's all those really beautiful, almost bezel-less, what do you call them? Like big giant displays that don't even look like a PC, right? And you can mount multiple ones next to each other. That's what we think
we're
going
to see. I don't think you can do that with this one, right?
Oh, so, right. You can't because you need the software to do that,
right?
Because
it's the old software. Yeah, the old software.
Yeah. So we think we'll see the 2S. It's supposed to ship sometime in 2019. And then the 2X, which is the one with all the new fancy software inside, Windows Core OS and a lot of other capabilities around collaboration, that isn't coming till 2020. So I don't know that we'll see that there, but I think we'll definitely see the 2S. Here, Panos
so
is going to be there.
Sorry.
Yep. No, that's it.
It will probably still ship before AirPower. And the Surface Hub 2, of course, has a modular design. And so there's a, I don't know that they're calling it a compute module, but there's a module you can kind of unplug and put the new thing in. And that's, you could upgrade this to the 2X if you want to later.
A lot of people were wondering if they may also use that event to announce other new Surfi, like a new revised laptop or new Surface Go or anything. I don't think they are going to do that because it's at Steelcase. It's with Steelcase at Steelcase. And I don't think this is going to be a thing where they're like, and here's one more thing. Unless the one more thing is like some kind of smaller peripheral kind of thing maybe, but I don't think they're going to announce any other new Surface devices at this event.
Maybe
it seems
we
very low key.
Could learn about the camera stuff, right? There'll be cameras.
Oh yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But so, yeah, I think this is literally. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're going.
So what do we do about Windows Weekly that day?
So we were initially worried about that, but actually the event's just in the morning, and I think what I'm going to do is I'll just have a hotel, so I'll just go back to the hotel and.
Okay.
Do it from there.
Or do it. It'd
be kind of nice to talk about it the same day, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. So we'll have coverage.
Yeah, I think it'll be fine.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Very fun.
But I don't think it's going to be like a lot of people are like, oh, this is where Centaurus is coming or Andromeda. No, not that. Yeah.
So it's a 2S event.
2S.
Yeah, when they put the word Steelcase in the invitation, it doesn't sound like, wow.
No.
I think the event is at Steelcase, right?
It is. Yeah.
That's cool. So...
very low key. It sounds like a very low key, not a big giant like amphitheater or something like this. Right. It's pretty small. Yeah.
We'd like to announce Windows 11.
Yes. Surprise.
This time I'm taking it to 11.
Yeah. All right, Mary Jo, if you want to go get a bite to eat.
All right, be back later.
It's No.
She loves Xbox.
She loves it. It's Xbox time.
No, I mean, this is really one story. There's two things on the list, but really this is it's really one thing, which is that obviously last week Google announced the Stadia service. Everyone's freaking out. Look at all this stuff. But I think the important thing to remember about Stadia is that literally there is nothing Google can do that Microsoft cannot do. There are a ton of things that Microsoft can do and will do that Google cannot. And a lot of it is tied to its decades of experience in the gaming industry.
Microsoft has games.
Yeah.
That's kind of an advantage in a gaming service.
Third party, yes. They have a whole, you know, it's really interesting to watch games or video games follow the same trajectory as servers and as Office 365 at Microsoft, which is that they're unique advantage over any company that wishes to compete with them in those spaces is existing user base on what we'll call on-prem and cloud-based offerings that can exist side by side while we make a transition to the future. And just the experience that comes from having been doing this for decades, you know? And so I think, you know, it's sort of a mini version of the seven stages of grief or whatever that is, you know, like a lot of people in the Microsoft community, I watched the Google thing with a little bit of apprehension. And this, you know, look, it's they're Google. They have some kind of googly weird things that they do, like the, you know, the Wi-Fi control that everyone's freaking out over. But, you know, when you don't have any recourse on the client, you have to really rethink everything. And if you, you know, how are we going to deliver games purely streaming? It's all data center based. We have to deal with latency, which is a very real issue. You know, they came up with something unique, and we'll see if it works. We'll see how well it works, whatever it is. But, you know, Microsoft has some very, very real advantages. And so, you know, we know last week that Phil Spencer had written the troops and said, guys, you know, it's cool. Google's doing what they're doing. You know, Microsoft's big unveiling of Project X Cloud will occur at E3 in June. They showed off a little bit of it this past week during the same show that Google announced Stadia. And they're going to have some of the same stuff. I mean, I think one of the goofier things that Microsoft is doing, one of the things I will say I'm a little nervous about, I'm not sure if this is maybe the right way to approach it, but it looks like Microsoft's going to do a little bit more on the rich client side, even with their cloud-based streaming, meaning that there's going to be an actual software application that's more than a remote viewer that's going to do stuff on the client. And we'll see, you know, we'll see how that goes. But that means they're setting, if assuming that's what they're doing, that they could be setting themselves up for keeping different clients up to date with each other and different feature sets on different clients. And, you know, we'll see. But, you know, they have, for example, on touchscreens, they have this glass interface for, you know, emulating the Xbox control. There are so many buttons that kind of covers the whole screen. It's a little bit like, you know, the old, if we turn on every toolbar in Word and, you know, there's like a tiny little postage stamp in the middle for typing. It looks a little bit like that, unfortunately. But anyway, the main point here is from the Microsoft perspective, this would be true of Sony as well, for sure. Any company that's already has a, you know, it's already in games, right? They have relationships with publishers of all sizes, independent game makers. They have a distribution thing that they've been doing forever. I mean, you know, Google has a couple of things. Obviously, the Play Store is big and whatever. But, you know, the people who choose Xbox or PlayStation are gamers, capital G, you know. The people who play games on their phones are just people, you know. And they're not necessarily interested in streaming services or paying Google $10 a month or whatever the cost is going to be. So I guess my point is just don't freak out. I don't – honestly, when you think about it logically – there's really nothing to worry about. The best they can do is match what Microsoft is doing technically. And even then, they're a mile behind because they just don't have any of the games or the stuff. It's like the Apple service, you know. You know, the Apple notion that developers were somehow not free to make the games they wanted to make until Apple came along is the most ludicrous assertion I've ever heard. But yeah, it's some magical thing they're going to do. And they're going to have new, you know, unique games, you know. Unique games that are only on one platform. What an innovation that is. Yeah, we've had that for a long time too, Apple. You know, so everyone's going to do this. You know, Amazon's getting involved. There'll be other companies. I think Microsoft's in a good place.
It's funny that you should feel the need to respond because honestly, I don't think what Google announced was at all a threat to anybody. It's completely vaporware.
Yeah, but you're smart, Leo. See, I think here's the thing. No, you know what it is? It's a volume kind of a thing. So if you're a hardcore gamer, I think there are two levels of truly hardcore gamers are PC guys. And they spend lots of money. They tune settings in games to make sure everything's exactly optimized the way they want. They don't care about this stuff. They don't care about it. But the thing people need to understand is that there is a much broader world of gaming that occurs. And it's lucrative. And it's hundreds of billions of dollars. And everyone wants a little piece of it. And if Google can turn this into a business, they could potentially reach an audience that is much bigger than the audience on Xbox Live or the audience on PlayStation Network or Steam or whatever it is, right? And just by sheer volume could become a much bigger player in this space, pardon the pun, by virtue of the numbers, you know. And it's, you know, we've had these battles throughout the history of technology. You know, people, yeah, there are more Windows computers than Mac users, but Mac users really, you know, they get it. You know, like they, you know, they're not the sheep. You know, like there's always this kind of a thing. But there's a lot of money to be made there. You know, and so it's possible they could come in and turn this into a real business. They might, maybe they will be one of several players. I don't know. You know, their mobile platform is popular. They have shown a real inability to make that work anywhere else, which is, I find very interesting. So yeah, I agree with you. I happen to think it's not going to do well, but as a gamer, I'm interested. As a technology enthusiast, I'm interested. And as a Microsoft guy, you know, you gotta think about this. You know, you gotta worry about it a little bit. I mean, you gotta evaluate it at least, right. And you may decide it's not a threat.
You know, I think it's not. I think it was part of a. It's part of a pernicious trend in tech these days. Apple announced a gaming arcade game subscription service Monday as well. Sure. That won't be available till the fall, and we don't know what the price will be, and they had no games really.
So it sounds exactly like
it sounds just there. Like Google. I think we're seeing more and more of this, and I have to say it looks like the tech industry has found it difficult to innovate, so they've taken to announcing vaporware again. Remember that was a big thing for a while, this vaporware.
It was. Freeze the market.
Welcome back to vaporware. Why?
It was. Yeah,
it's confusing at Apple because this is the type of thing they didn't really do under Steve Jobs, and they've had a lot of problems with this. You know, I've joked about AirPower. I mean, they announced something, and then where is it? You know, what's going on? What's going on with the Mac Pro?
Yeah,
it's the type of thing he would. I mean, it was considered a big deal when Steve Jobs announced the iPad, I believe, in January, and they didn't ship it till April.
Right.
You know, back in 2010.
And the original iPhone was January till June, but that existed. It was a product. They had to get FCC approval. They didn't want the FCC to, you know, give it all away.
Maybe it has to do with content, right? Like if you don't have something out there, like at least a name, you could see the game publishers saying, okay, let's put all our eggs in the xCloud basket.
Yeah, but when you announce... when you announce like a Google service for gaming and you don't even announce a game or a publisher that's literally going to be on this thing for sure, you're making a big bet that you're going to get something interesting. I mean, it seems odd that you wouldn't say we've already lined up XX and X and here are five of the games we know we're going to be there. Don't worry. There's going to be a ton more. Mm-hmm. How do you announce a gaming service and not show games?
True.
You know? Oh, it's crazy. You know, they mentioned Doom, for example, right? I think I talked about this when it happened, but they didn't show a gameplay demo with that thing.
No.
Are you kidding me? They showed like the opening credits.
Well, on Monday, Apple announced a bunch of new TV shows and didn't show any clips. So,
it's unbelievable. Yeah, I know.
That must be the trend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sad. I mean, vaporware used to be such a problem in the early days of the PC industry.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then
yep.
it kind of went away.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, this is these guys flexing their muscles, right? Remember the big knock against Microsoft in the early 90s, mid-90s, whatever, was that other companies would kind of announce they were getting to some kind of space, and Microsoft would be like, oh, yeah, we're going to do that too, you know? Mm-hmm. And they weren't even planning on doing it. But they, you know, they killed Go Computing that way or, you know, because they were going to do all this handwriting stuff. I mean, they put some baloney pen window stuff in for a couple of releases, but it wasn't really until 2002 that they had anything that made any sense. They killed pen computing in like 1990, you know, and maybe that's what these guys are doing. Right. I mean, you know, Apple and Google and we'll see, you know, Amazon, they're going to be others feel like it's more important to stake a claim here because they don't want their massive user bases looking elsewhere.
True. Yep.
Perhaps. I'm not justifying or not. I'm not saying it's okay, but maybe that's what they're thinking.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Let's take a time out because that wonderful time has come that we like to call the back of the book. And we will get Paul's tips, Mary Jo's picks, and some beer. But first, a word from Atlassian, the software that powers our IT team. Should be powering yours as well. IT these days, you might be happy to hear this, being probably an IT person listening to this show or somebody who loves you know, IT is the center of all the big businesses these days. It's where everything happens. And Atlassian, the collaboration software company, is at the center of IT teams around the world. Staying competitive in an increasingly cloud-based world means IT is the group that has to plan and execute, and they've got to do it faster and better than ever. Because today's applications are more complex than ever, incidents often require open, agile, smart cooperation between operations and software development. Expectations are high, the stakes are high, and it's IT that's smack dab in the middle. And of course, if it's business critical workflow, you can't fall short. You got to get the job done. That's why our IT team, when I come thundering down the hall saying, "What's the latest on?" They go, look in Jira. When we've got projects, we put them in Jira. We know who's responsible, the stage of the project's in, what they're working on right now. That is awesome. And any development house knows Jira, of course, because it was the cornerstone of agile development. But it's not just for developers. Atlassian offers an affordable, reliable suite of tools for teams of all types and all sizes, from DevOps to Agile to IT apps and Ops to ITSM and whatever's next. Atlassian provides a technology backbone to help modern IT organizations plan, service, and support the kind of change that propels business. We use Jira, as I said, to keep track of projects, Confluence to document what's going on. That's really important. And they can use both without ever leaving the system, which means it's more likely to get documented. There's Bitbucket if you've got a code database. Those three right there are the backbone of effective cross-team project planning, organization, and communication. There's also, because Atlassian keeps adding to their offerings, Ops Genie and Status Page now that help teams detect incidents better, coordinate response efforts, resolve issues faster. And I have to say I appreciate it because Atlassian tools are always about communication. And with these tools, they can keep the stakeholders, the colleagues, the boss up to date and informed. And our team does that, and I'm very grateful. Your teams can choose tools that are right for your current framework while trusting that as you grow, they will grow with you. And it all integrates seamlessly right with the Jira and Confluence, which keeps your team from bouncing around from platform to platform. Here's the deal. Like all of Atlassian's products, the tools your IT team needs to be more effective, to work better together, to work more efficiently, are there at Atlassian.com/IT. They're easy and free to try. Just head to Atlassian.com/IT and take a look at the offerings. Find the ones that are right for your team. Try Atlassian today to see what IT can be. That's Atlassian.com/IT. Back to Paul Thurrott, and I'm glad you are bringing this up because I saw this and I think it's tragic and something important.
Yeah, we neglected to mention this last week by mistake, but at a lay-in, I apologize if I'm not pronouncing his name correctly. It's a Microsoft MVP developer UX designer was killed in the Christchurch terrorist attack last week. And he has ties to AdDuplex, one of the companies that I follow who does the Windows 10 usage stuff. He was the UX designer behind their app, Raisin app. And he also worked on MetroTube and Tweetro. But there is a Give a Little campaign where people can donate money to his family, which I recommend that you do if you can. Definitely check it out. We'll have the link in the show notes.
Huge loss to the community. Mm. Really tragic.
Yeah, it's really terrible. Yeah, it's just terrible. And it's just kind of as a side tip, I guess, or an actual tip. The apparent completion of 19H1 leads us to that most special time of the year, which is the magic window time period. And that is the time where you as a Windows insider can unenroll a PC from the program and not suffer from any strange side effects, right? So let's say it was back in December and you're like, I'm tired of testing 19H1. I'm going to unenroll my computer. You're stuck. At that point, you cannot roll back to the shipping version. You're just stuck on where you are, and you won't get any updates until 19H1 ships, whatever that might be. And so during the magic window period, you can unenroll. You'll just get on the shipping support schedule. So as cumulative updates, you know, monthly updates come out, you'll get those. And you're out of the program, right? So you're not going to start, you know, get jumped back onto the fast ring or onto the next version of Windows as the fast ring moves forward. So I think we're there. I actually posted the article, and then, of course, this happened. This is the second time this has happened to me. The slow ring release of this build was found to have an installation problem. So it's possible they're actually going to iterate the build, in which case you're going to have to re-sign into the fast ring, download the next build, and then unenroll again. But here's the good news. That process is actually way easier than it used to be. back in, I think it was, or it must have been 1809, you had to reboot your computer. There was a whole series of steps you had to go through. It's actually really easy in the UI now. So starting with 19H1, going in and out of Insider is actually easier than before. So it's not going to be a huge disaster like it was last time if you have to install one more build. So I feel reasonably safe saying that you can maybe do that and you'll be okay. I don't know. So really, it's not absolute for sure. And then for the app pick, I was kind of hoping for something better than this, but there wasn't really a lot going on this week. And I was also, I have to say, I'm surprised this wasn't the case before, but Mozilla updated their, it's actually their iOS app for Firefox, right? So that there's now a native version on iPad that supports iPad functionality, like split screen support, and, you know, just takes advantage of the on-screen real estate better. Also supports keyboard shortcuts, right? So if you have a smart keyboard or Bluetooth keyboard, it will work more natively like that. So if this is a thing for you, you want to use an iPad, you weirdo, you could use Firefox.
And then the Enterprise Pick of the Week.
Our Enterprise Pick of the Week has a lot of buzzwords in it, but it's still a worthwhile product. It is called Azure Stack HCI. HCI stands for Hyper-Converged Infrastructure. What is that, you ask? It's hard to define, really.
I do ask that.
The conventional definition of it is when you have a software-defined IT infrastructure. In other words, you take things that are normally in hardware and you make them available in software. So things like a virtualized SAN, virtualized networking, virtualized computing. This is what hyper-converged infrastructure means very roughly. So this week, Microsoft said, we have a new member of the Azure Stack family. It's called Azure Stack HCI. This is for people who don't want to do what Azure Stack does, which is run Azure infrastructure as a service and platform as a service services on premises. Instead, with HCI version of Azure Stack, you just take your apps and you run them as virtualized workloads, just the way you would do if you were running plain old Windows Server apps. But you'll be able to connect back to Azure and Azure Stack to make use of those capabilities in the cloud. So yeah, it's a mouthful, but Microsoft did unveil it this week, and they already have 15 partners, all different kinds of hardware partners, where they've gone and actually worked with the hardware partners to verify that their products will work with Azure Stack HCI. So if you see anything called Azure Stack HCI Solutions from companies like EMC and Hitachi, Lenovo, NEC, that's what these things are. They have 70 Azure Stack HCI solutions now from these 15 partners available as of this week. So it sounds very esoteric, but people get pretty excited on Twitter about this. It's kind of a way to take another little toe dip into the cloud without it being too scary, because you're just basically running your virtualized apps on premises on top of Windows Server 2019. So cool. That's Enterprise Pick 1.
Nice. Number 2.
Number two, okay, so Microsoft's been talking about this thing called, that used to be called connected car, and then it became known as connected vehicle for years, like at least for 3 years. Every year at CES especially, you'll hear them say, yeah, we've got these new partners for connected vehicle. And it doesn't mean Microsoft's putting Windows in the car. That was their old strategy, trying to get Windows embedded in cars. Now their strategy is, have car vendors work with us so that they're using Azure-based services on the back end and feeding them into cars. So for some, these can be for very practical things like service, proactive monitoring, navigation. And then they also sometimes throw in Office 365. Like if hopefully you're in the back seat and not in the driver's seat and you want to look at a PowerPoint presentation or take a work video call, you could potentially use some of these kinds of services in their vehicle platform. So every year they talk about this. Every year it sounds great. They still have tons of different car partners working with them. But finally, a week ago, we found out a delivery date for the first cars that will have this in them. They're going to come from Renault, Nissan, Mitsubishi, as known as the Alliance, and they're going to be out before the end of this year. So there's going to be Renault Clio in Europe and the Nissan Leaf models in Japan and Europe. As of, we don't have the exact month, but as of this year, finally, there will be cars running the Microsoft Connected Car platform. The reason I brought this up today is, I don't know if you saw, Amazon made a big announcement with Volkswagen today, where they're doing some of their industrial car platform work for them with AWS. By the way, Volkswagen also is a Microsoft Azure partner for these connected cars. Mm. So it's just yet another example of how almost no big customer is just with one cloud partner. They all have multiple clouds, and they're making use of different cloud partners for different kinds of projects.
Hmm. Very cool.
Yep.
I like when you talk about cars.
Especially since I don't drive. It's hilarious, right?
Well, you
haven't driven
have to
in
drive.
Like 20 years.
That's the
I haven't
point
driven
of
in 20
this.
Years.
Someday, none of us will drive.
I know. Right? That's the goal,
I
right?
I look forward to that day. Are you kidding?
I know.
Based on
great.
The $6,700 worth of damage that my daughter did to her vehicle, I look
yeah.
forward to that
exactly.
day.
Yikes.
I don't even
yep.
let my daughter drive anymore. She has to Uber everywhere. I just say, you're an early adopter. This is the beginning.
Yeah.
The beginning.
Yep.
The beginning of the end of car ownership.
Yeah. I like it.
And for that, I raise a beer.
All right.
Your pick of the week.
So March is Women's History Month. We're almost at the end of March. But I realized I hadn't done a beer pick from either a woman-owned or a women-run brewery for March, which I like to do sometimes.
Nice.
So I decided to go with Fort Collins-based New Belgium Brewing.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the co-founder of New Belgium was a woman named Kim Jordan. Her husband was the other co-founder. And she did everything at New Belgium. Washed bottles, was a beer rep, and actually ended up becoming the CEO of the company at one point. New Belgium makes a lot of really great beers. And the thing I like about their beers is they're widely available. Because a lot of times when I do beer picks, people are like, yeah, that's great, but I can never get your beers. So Fat Tire is a beer you likely can get. It's very widely available. It's an amber, very approachable, easy drinking. And now it's even in cans. So you might see even more of it if you hadn't seen a lot of it before. It's just like your basic, well-made amber beer. Not too hoppy, just kind of mellow, a little malty. If you're somebody who doesn't like those hoppy beers, like someone I know on this podcast, you might like New Belgian Amber.
Seriously, every time she orders a beer, like you can't even get within 2 feet of it. You can smell the hops coming from down the hall.
Paul's like, let me just smell that. And then he's like, nope.
It's like it comes near me like, yep. that's all right.
Fat Tire's a good go-to because a lot of places do have it. And if they don't have any of your favorite craft beers.
It's going to be like their flagship, beer.
It is. Yeah. It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yep. Well, that's that. Thank you, Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com. Thank you, Paul Theroux, Theroux.com, and LeanPub.com.
Thank you, Leo Laporte, LeoLaporte.com, I assume.
Yeah, that's right. you assume correct, my friend. We do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch live at twit.tv/live, chat live at irc.tv, and download versions after the fact at twit.tv/ww, or subscribe in your favorite podcast application. So, in fact, we encourage you to do that. That way, you'll have a copy the minute you get in the car and go, oh, let me listen. We will see you next week, and then I'm going to go on a little vacation for a couple of weeks. I'm sure Megan will be filling in for me.
Thanks. Hawaii?
I'm going to Hawaii, yeah. Week from Friday.
I hear the weather is terrible.
Actually, it isn't the best right now. It's not super hot, but it's nice.
I'm sure it's awesome.
Kauai is a little rainy, but I can live with that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Blah, blah.